Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a mental health platform that provides direct online counseling and therapy services via web or phone text communication. You don't even need to use flu powder in order to access a therapist through BetterHelp. I think we can all tell in book five that if you keep your feelings bottled up, it can start to affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off of your chest if you don't have access to Dumbledore's office. I know in my life, therapy has helped me identify patterns to help me interrupt ones that I don't feel like are healthy and find better ways to cope. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/sacredtext today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/sacredtext.
Chapter 28, Snape's Worst Memory. By order of the Ministry of Magic, Dolores Jane Umbridge, High Inquisitor, has replaced Albus Dumbledore as head of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. The above is in accordance with Educational Decree number 28.
I'm Casper Ter Kyle.
And I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And this is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
And our quote this week was read by Emily Lemon. Emily won some very competitive game at camp and was the victor. And so in exchange for her victory, we put her to work. Because that's what we think prizes are. So, Emily, thank you so much for coming to camp and for doing such a beautiful job reading our opening quote this week. Casper, a couple of announcements before we get started. One is that we always want people to review us on Apple Podcasts, where you can also subscribe ad-free, because Casper lives on compliments. That's where he gets his energy points.
It's true. I think without the early people who commented on Apple Podcasts, we would not have continued, because that was the only way we knew it was real. And I'm still not sure if they were not all your mother, but I believe them.
And then, of course, we want to let people know about our reflavored bean conversation. We believe that Harry is being tutored on a very interesting subject by a true expert. And so we are going to discuss what subject we would like to be tutored on and by whom.
Ooh. Spoiler alert, mine does not involve Jake Gyllenhaal, but it should.
It should. And you can listen to that at patreon.com/Harry Potter Sacred Text.
Vanessa, we're reading this week's chapter through the theme of kindness, and you have a story for us.
So Casper, you already hinted at this. You did a little foreshadowing because you mentioned how sweet my mom is. And this is a story about my mom's deep kindness. This is inspired because I really do want to honor someone important in my life who just passed away. My kindergarten teacher, Jean, passed away just a couple of months ago. And the reason I know at 41 years old what happened to my kindergarten teacher is because my mother kept in touch with her. They lost touch for about 20 years. So it was in my mid-20s that they reconnected on Facebook. And, you know, they reconnected in a very light way on Facebook. And then a couple of years into their Facebook friendship, Jean posted a GoFundMe saying that she had been scammed out of all of her money and, you know, if anybody could help her out. And my mom, of course, never told us how much money she gave because it was probably more than we would have approved of. But she didn't just give Jean money. She reached out and she and Jean in this moment where Jean felt truly isolated and hopeless about humanity, my mom was there for her. And they got back in touch, and they were really actively in touch in a moment of crisis and sort of rekindled a friendship. And then over the last 15 years, their friendship sort of waned quite a bit. Jean had become an evangelical Christian and was regularly trying to convert my mother and had conservative values that my mother didn't agree with. And then Jean was posting a lot about being pro-Trump and anti-vaxxer. And so my mom like kept tabs on her, but lost as active of touch. But then Jean called my mom one day to let my mom know that she was given a terminal cancer diagnosis. And from that day until Jean's death just a couple of months ago, my mom and Jean talked every day. And, you know, my mom found out, she called Jean like she always did in the morning. And Jean's son picked up and said, "Nikki, my mother has passed away. But, you know, it was nearly impossible for me to be in relationship with my mother for the last couple of years. And so thank you for being so kind to her, because it meant so much to me to know that somebody was." So the two things that this makes me think of are, one, that kindness is generative, right? Like being kind to someone is actually probably a kindness to more than one person. And the other thing is just that kindness is not black and white. It's not linear. It's hard, right? Like my mom was not as in touch when Jean was saying things that were deeply offensive to her, but didn't cut her out, you know, whole hog, which I think is something that I'm really tempted to do often. And then was able to just like step in when it was clear that that was the right thing to do. And so, yeah, and I just think kindness is actually quite complicated. And George Saunders talks in his famous commencement address about how kindness is the one thing that you definitely will not regret on your deathbed. You will never regret a moment in which you were kind. And I think we see how complicated and hard that is and what a risk that is in the story about my mom, and also in a lot of acts of kindness in this chapter.
Wow, Nikki is amazing.
I know.
That's really hard. And it's really hard also when it's not your responsibility. Like I hear in your story, it wasn't expected that your mom was doing this outreach and caretaking. It really came from a place of kindness.
And not pity. Which always surprised me. You know, I would be like, "Mom, you don't have to do this." She was like, "I know." It wasn't like, "But poor thing." Like, I don't know where that comes from in her, but it's like a muscle that I want.
Yeah, that makes sense, and makes it all the more beautiful that it wasn't necessary, or it wasn't even like charity. It was just kindness. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Casper, I just want to share with you Etymology Corner. Kindness comes from the old German for kin, so family. And so kindness is about treating everyone as if they were your family. Or having an expansive idea of family, which I think is really beautiful. It, you know, the straight definition is friendly and deliberately doing good to others, which is also something I like, you know, deliberately doing good to others. But Casper, before we jump into the chapter, will you do me the kindness of a 30-second recap?
I'm ready.
On your mark, get set, go.
So Umbridge is the new headmistress, and everyone's talking about the fight that she must have had, and like all sorts of rumors are spreading and people are asking Harry about it. And then the twins are like, "Haha, it's time for us to create chaos." And they release their entire like fireworks stock, and there's like dragons going through the hall chasing Filch, and they're mating with each other outside the windows, and it's going crazy. And then Harry has to go get special occupancy lessons, but bad things are happening. So he goes into the Pensieve and sees Snape's worst memory, where his father is a horrible bully against Nivellus. Exactly. Wow. 30 seconds, I will say. I really stuck the landing. But maybe you can tell us more about why it's such an awful memory.
Teamwork makes the dream work, baby.
Are you ready? Here we go.
I am.
3, 2, 1, go.
So the twins are just like, "We don't even care anymore." And they are out of there. And yes, I'll tell you about what Harry sees. So it turns out that his father was a real bully to Snape. And Lily, his mother, was super protective of Snape and was actually very brave and went and confronted James. and he sees that his dad was kind of a jerk, and Sirius was kind of a jerk, and Wormtail was kind of like pathetic, and Lupin just sort of checked out from the whole situation, and I think it's giving Harry Major the itch.
Do you have Gen Z children at home? Because that was very, I was about to say on fleek, but that itself is 5 years old.
I think like 10 years old.
Oh my God. Vanessa, I want to start with maybe the most obvious moment of kindness in the text, which is when Harry is in the Pensieve looking at Snape's worst memory, and Snape is in his teenage years, it's exam time, and there's, you know, an altercation with James, Sirius, Wormtail, and Lupin. They kind of go outside, and then basically James is trying to impress girls by like catching a little snitch, and like after a while he gets bored, and Snape comes out and he's like, oh good, I get to like make fun of this boy.
I get to be a bully.
I get to be a bully in front of these girls. And he keeps like touching his hair, which, you know, I get because hair is big. But he bullies Snape, not just with words, like it gets really physical.
Yeah.
And sure, Snape retaliates. But as this is escalating, and I do want to say that the intervention from Lily, who I'm going to mention in a moment, does not happen straight away. It comes a little bit into the bullying. But then there is this moment of kindness where Lily says, leave him alone. She's really stepping in. Everyone's laughing. Everyone's letting it happen. Lily's the only one who intervenes. But only after this kind of soap hex that James does to wash out Snape's mouth. Like it gets really ugly really quickly. And so that moment of intervention, I think, is the most significant kindness that we see. It's like she really puts herself in between James and Snape.
Yeah, the thing I'll say is that I can imagine Lily standing there and being like, I don't want to embarrass Snape by stepping in too soon, right? There are just so many gender politics of like, if she stepped in too soon, they could be like, oh, you need a girl to protect you, right? So like, I do think that this doesn't just take courage of like standing up against what everybody else seems to be enjoying. But I do think that this is like genuinely hard. It is complicated to be kind. Is he actually going to feel emasculated by my stepping in? But the other thing that I love about this kindness as represented, not as an act, is that Lily knows that James has a crush on her.
Yeah.
And so she has a little bit of power, and she is using her power. Because I really was trying to imagine myself into the scene, and I can imagine being like, stop it, and then being scared that he's going to show everyone my underwear, right? Like, that's the thing about bullying, right? If kindness reverberates, so does bullying. A lot of people are laughing, but I'm sure that there are a lot of people around there who are just scared to intervene. And Lily is very brave, but also she knows that she has this power. She knows that most likely James is not going to attack her because he likes her.
Well, and also, you know, later in the scene, Snape says, I don't need help from filthy little mudbloods like her. And that's not the first time he said that to her or about her. And so I think there's also a little part of Lily, which is like, well, a little bit of bullying might do him some good, you know? And so there's a little piece of her that I think does think, well, he deserves some of this. Or at least I'm not going to step in straight away because, you know, why should I? Like, he's been awful to me. So there's a little bit of revenge mixed in with this kindness, which makes it even more complicated.
Yeah. It almost seems like she just can't stand it anymore, right? Like, she's like, this is just torture now.
That's exactly right. Like, it's not actually about Snape. It's about the fact that James is doing it to anyone. That is so smart.
And so if we're thinking about this word deliberate, right, we don't know. You know, we don't get into Lily's head. But you get the sense that it's sort of bubbling out of her. The thing that is interesting to me, given the etymology, right, if we're thinking about we'll treat everyone as if they're your family, right, that I think that often religion's job is to expand what someone's idea is as family. Mm-hmm. I mean, priests are called father, right? Like, and brother and sister, right? Like, this is language that's used very intentionally in religious settings. And I think that it's not just your immediate family, but your whole church is your family. And then obviously a problem that I have is that often that is where the imagination of this family experiment ends. But I do think that one of the things that a school environment tries to do is say, like, you are all family, right? Like, you should all be a community of care together. And that does seem to be the way that Lily steps in, where it's like one brother abusing the other brother. And she's just like, stop it.
Yeah, I love that image of like deliberate caregiving. And it actually takes me back to your story as well, where it's like, it's not that your mother was like particularly close friends with Jean. In fact, she thought a lot of the, you know, political views and her evangelism and various other things were not things she would choose to be around, but like there was a sense of responsibility. And I think that's an interesting line to draw, is what's the line between kindness and responsibility? Because you could read this scene as Lily being like, I'm going to uphold the decency of the school.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to look in the text and be like, what is it about this intervention that makes it kind?
I think part of it is the straightforwardness of it.
Hmm.
It's not like he's weaker than you. It's not pity. It's just like, this isn't what we do, right? It's about decency. And like, this is what we do. We are decent to one another.
Because she does, I mean, she does turn on James. Like, I'm just testing a theory here. She's like,
yeah,
I'm surprised your broomstick can get off the ground with that fat head on it. You make me sick, right? And like, there's clearly a lot going on in these like teenage hormone moments where she's like really angry at him because maybe she also likes him a little bit. And she's like, I don't like the fact that I like you, right? You're as bad as he is. And so I feel like she's just fed up as much as she is kind.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. Ultimately, it's about the fact of her willingness to kind of sacrifice her own. Yeah, there's a sacrificial element to this, right? Like, she's not just upholding the rules. She is risking, as you said, ridicule. She's risking even, like, her personal safety to some extent, right? The curses and hexes being thrown around here are no joke. And that gives this a courage and a generosity that I think you're right to read as kind.
Yeah. It's just interesting because it's juxtaposed against so many other people's behavior, mm-hmm. right? She like so clearly is the one who steps up. And one that's interesting to me is Lupin, right? Because Sirius is egging James on. Other people have gathered around. Peter is definitely like enthralled, I think to some extent, just because it's not him who's being picked on. But Lupin is just sort of sitting there, right? And is like kind of pretending to read. And I do think of that saying that, like, all it takes for evil to pass is good people doing nothing. Obviously, calling into question whether or not those people are good. And I obviously think that we have to pick our battles. We can't be on every battlefront all of the time. But you can imagine Lupin stepping up here. And it's understandable as to why he can't, right? He feels as though these three men are so kind to him. They like change their body every month to run around with him. And so if he sees himself as a charity case, he doesn't feel as though he has the political capital to risk kindness here. But you do wish he had been like, hey guys, at least like vote with your voice and be like, this isn't cool, guys.
I mean, the whole setup, right? I mean, we know more about Sirius's background and the challenges that he faces at home. It makes James look all the worse, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, he's really just a nasty piece of work. And I think you're absolutely right to read Lupin in this kind of, he doesn't have, the authority maybe within the broader group, or he has too much to risk, right? Like, if James is like this, what is he going to say if I try and intervene? Is he going to reveal the fact that I'm a werewolf? Is he going to tease me and suggest things, right? Like, because he's already worried that the time of the month is coming where you know, his transfiguration is going to take place. So it just dials up the cruelty, I think, that we see in James. And it makes sense that Harry leaves this entire scene really understanding Snape's hatred for the first time in its fullness.
I will say, the fact that Snape calls Lily a mudblood, right?
Yeah.
I know we talked about this last time, but I do think that that is part, potentially, of why this is his worst memory, is because it was a moment in which he was cruel to the woman that he loved. And there's just a lot of shame around that. I don't think it's just about the humiliation. I think it's about regret about cruelty.
Yeah.
But you do get the sense, I mean, James is awful. You just get a sense of how complicated these ecosystems are because you're like, I don't know, punch a Nazi every once in a while. And if Snape is running around saying things that would invalidate Lupin's existence and, you know, make quote unquote mudbloods feel unsafe, right? Like, I can imagine deeply hating Snape if he's essentially walking around as a Death Eater.
100%. Yeah, I'm trying to think about the relationship, as we have done every time we read these books, between the individual interactions and the systemic structures that put people in these positions in the first place. And, you know, you can talk about like a person being kind, maybe even like, oh, that's a kind culture. But yeah. Like, it's rare that you think of an institution as kind. And I'm trying to understand, is that because it takes a certain heart or like personality? Like, there's something that only an individual can possess that makes it kind that an institution can't. I'm curious what you think.
I think systems can be kind. I really do. I just think, I don't know enough about how this all happened, but I remember, you know, the announcement of a lot of schools that LeBron James was investing in Cleveland. And just everybody would get free breakfast and free lunch because he didn't want kids who qualified for free breakfast and lunch to be like outed as poorer than their classmates. Yeah. Right. And so I do think that there are ways to institutionalize kindness.
Yeah.
It takes thinking outside of the box and like being creative, just because that's not how, you know, so many of our institutions are designed around a scarcity mindset and created by people who have a lot and therefore are afraid of losing things. But I do think that there are ways to set up kind systems.
I love that story. And of course, I'm thinking immediately like, yeah, it takes a LeBron James, right? It takes an individual
totally
to make that system be kinder. And I completely understand the way in which like, yes, structures and systems can be equitable. And but maybe the way I would think about it now is like, kindness is one of the first things to go.
Yes.
Right? Maybe we start with free breakfast for all kids, but then because of budget cuts, we start thinking about, well, you know, let's make it means tested. Let's make sure that it's really the kids who need it most who get it. And, you know, kids who can afford it, like, won't get free breakfast. And suddenly you're in a system where it's very visible about who needs the free breakfast, right? And so,
right.
Of course, systems can be kind, but maybe that's what I'm taking away from this conversation, is that it's often the first thing to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we see that in another place in this chapter. We think of Harry as, I think, a very kind person. And we see him, understandably, but really jump to judging and hating Marietta Edgecombe, right? We hear this conversation between Cho and Harry in this chapter. And Harry is saying, like, God, your friend betrayed us. You should have better taste in friends, right? He's like implicating Cho in her friend's bad choices, which I understand being mad at Marietta, but also there is just no 2% this is complicated in Harry.
Well, this is interesting because it actually extends the question I was asking about institutions to individuals. Because what Cho is saying is literally, she's a lovely person, really. She just made a mistake. And so I'm wondering, can we ever really talk about people as being kind people? Or can we only talk about interactions or moments or actions when we are doing kind things? Like, can you be kind or can you only do kind? I'm compelled by Hermione and Harry. Like, this is life or death stuff, right? And so, like, yeah, there are moments when you, like, yeah, you have to have sneak written across your face. The key question of, like, doing or being.
I think that this is really complicated, right? That it would be an impossible amount to ask of Harry and Hermione individually to not want revenge from the person who, like, really risks quite a lot in like selling out the DA. It's interesting, you know, you're talking a lot about systems and whether systems can be kind. I actually think we need our systems to be kind on our own behalfs, right? We have a jury of our peers decide whether or not someone deserves to be punished. It shouldn't be up to the victims, because the victims should just be allowed to be enraged. And so this is actually leading me to think that like, it's actually really important for our systems to be designed with the values that we care about when we're calm and when we aren't the victims, but when we have empathy for the victims. Cho does say something really interesting on the score, though, right? She says, but we didn't get caught. And so I do think that Cho would feel differently about Marietta if it had just been unlucky, which is always an interesting thing.
Yeah, there's a whole conversation here, I think, underneath the one we're having, which is about means and ends, right? Yeah. Like, can you reach just ends with unjust means? Can you act justly towards unjust means? That feels embedded within the whole narrative, in Dumbledore especially, I think, right? Like, that's the conversation we've always had about Dumbledore, about, like, is he right to use these children in this strategic way for the greater good, right? That whole idea of the greater good is so suspect from the beginning. And yet, And yet, if you are in a battle, if you are in a war and you have choices to make in snap seconds, you know, to save your friends, to what are you going to do, right? There is no perfect answer.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The only moment of perfection of kindness in this chapter that I see
is when Flitwick collects all the exam papers and is knocked over by the weight of all the flying papers at him.
And students go and help him up to his feet again.
And don't laugh.
And don't laugh, right? There's so much respect in the room. I love that. He's a little guy. It's going to be a lot of heavy papers flying at you. This week, we are turning towards Alectio practice. And Vanessa, I'm going to ask you to give me a page number between 550 and 573.
58.
And I'm going to ask you to choose paragraphs between 1 and 10.
8.
Here is our sentence. Even Hermione fought her way through the excited crowd to congratulate them. Tell us what is happening. Step one of Lectio. What's going on?
So Fred and George have just unleashed chaos. They have, you know, released all of these fireworks that are just like growing and growing. And the more you try to fight them, the more they grow. And Hermione at the beginning of this chapter has told the twins, like, don't act like idiots. You're going to get expelled. And now she has seen the kind of hijinks that they are up to. And even Hermione, who has told them not to, even Hermione, the little rule follower, even Hermione, who believes that all rebellion should be very well organized, is like, no, guys, that was awesome.
Fought her way through the crowd. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And yeah, there's a whole crowd surrounded to congratulate the boys.
And this follows just a few paragraphs before Professor McGonagall saying sardonically, dear, dear, Miss Brown, would you mind running along to the headmistress and informing her we have an escaped firework in our classroom? I love it.
Oh, I love when Flitwick says, oh, I'm so sorry. I could have done that myself, but I wasn't sure if I was allowed.
I didn't have the authority. Delicious.
Like, choke on your rules. I love it.
Oh, pettiness. Nothing tastes better. All right. Step two. Even Hermione fought her way through the excited crowd to congratulate them. What other scenes or stories, images, songs? This reminds me of kind of like, I don't even know which music video, but I'm seeing like 90s music videos where someone is like, maybe it's Enrique Iglesias' Hero. Like someone is like trying to get through paparazzi to get to their love. You know, like I'm fighting through the crowd. So there's this like yearning, this desire. Oh my God, does Hermione maybe have a thing for one of the twins? I'd never thought about that.
It reminds me of the end of The Karate Kid where Danny LaRusso wins the big karate match, even on an injured foot. And his girlfriend, Elizabeth Shue, runs to him. And I think his mom runs to him. Everybody runs to him. But Mr. Miyagi, who like was his teacher and coach, stands there proudly sort of outside. And they like make eye contact from sort of across the crowd. And so I'm just thinking about all of those moments. Or It also reminds me of one of my all-time favorite movies, My Best Friend's Wedding.
Oh.
Or Father of the Bride, too, right? Where, like, the bridal couple is leaving, but the character who we care about, like, doesn't get to say goodbye to the bride or to the groom. But then the spouse, the new spouse, finds, you know, in My Best Friend's Wedding, his best friend. And in Father of the Bride, she calls her dad and is, like, even amongst all the crowds, right? Like, I love you. I love those moments, man, where you're like amongst a crowd and then you like lock eyes with someone and you're like, but you're the person in this crowd right. who matters to me.
It's like, I choose you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I love everything, but like, I love you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can imagine that meaning a lot to Fred and George, right?
Absolutely.
Of like, there's a whole crowd, but Hermione coming up. They're like, whoa, even Hermione. You actually really can imagine this meaning a lot to them.
Totally. Okay, that takes us to step three, which is our own experience. Even yeah. Hermione fought her way through the excited crowd to congratulate them.
So I have something immediately comes to mind.
What?
So this is a very Zoltan family episode. So the first live show that my family was able to see that you and I did, you just really saw the personalities of my brothers and father come out in their response to it. Because, you know, people lined up after the show to like hug us. And, you know, it's so lovely. And we get to meet our listeners. And my younger brother, Jonathan, stood in line to wait to say
so sweet.
Hi to me. My older brother came and stood right next to me and heckled people. People were like, oh my God, I love you. And David was like, stop it. Her head is big enough. Please stop. This is embarrassing. And then my dad sat there and watched. And then afterwards was like, you were very nice to everyone. That was great. And I was like, well, that's a Rorschach test of my brothers and my dad. And just, you know, Ellen, the first time she came to a live show, stood in line. And just that feeling of like, you don't have to stand in line, you know, like you should be next to me. So of those three reactions, I will say I actually like my brother David's the best. I know, right? And he's like the most secure in our relationship.
He's just trash talking everyone, giving you compliments.
Yeah, he's just like, stop it. What are you doing? She's the worst. I'll tell you embarrassing stories. What about you? What does it remind you of in your life?
I'm thinking back to like my early professional life and that I received professional respect from someone who I didn't actually like and who didn't really like me, but that they were like, no, but I see that you're good at this. That has this weird, because you know it's not fake. And it's not that other people who like you, who give you compliments are being fake, right? Like they're also telling the truth, but it's coated in this lovely, sugary layer of friendship or, you know, intimacy. And this is just like a cold, hard pill of respect. And so, yeah, I'm thinking about those moments when maybe I made a presentation or did something and someone who I didn't feel close to still gave me a compliment.
Yeah.
Even Hermione fought her way through the excited crowd to congratulate them. Step four, we try and think of something that we might want to do or take away from this conversation. I think what I'm being called to do is like, I think I'm pretty good at congratulating people when it's easy, but I think I want to be more intentional about fighting my way through the crowd, you know? Mm. Like, I'll text someone or I'll DM someone and be like, wow, I loved, even like strangers whose music I enjoy or something like that, I'll pretty often write and say thank you. But like, I don't think I've been like in person and like waited in line or, you know, pushed my way through a crowd to say to someone recently that I really appreciated what they've done. So I want to have that fortitude next time it happens. How about you?
I can't help it. I just want to quote something that Matt Potts said on this podcast once.
That's always a good idea.
Yeah, when in doubt. I think in step four, said that what he wants to do is start paying more attention to his cheerleaders rather than to his dissenters. You know, we were joking about Stephanie Paulsell, our beloved mentor, who were like, she thinks we can do no wrong. And so when she compliments us, who cares?
Right.
When really, like, I really value what Stephanie thinks. And like, why not listen to that? And like, it's actually disrespectful to just like throw that out. Don't have her be the sole voice. And just because Stephanie, you know, still thinks I'm great after I mess up doesn't mean that I didn't mess up. And, you know, but I just want to invite us all to also listen to our cheerleaders. I think it's really easy to let an insult or an unkind word stick and to just write off kindness as biased. I just want us to equalize these things at minimum, right? Like, unkind comments are also biased. And the twins, I think, are a great example of this, where, like, even when Hermione dissents, you know, they respect her, but are like, whatever. And I'm sure this compliment means a lot. So I don't know. Mm. Don't feed the trolls, but also, like, sometimes at least listen to your cheerleaders.
Feed the cheerleaders. That's my takeaway from it.
Feed, starve the trolls, feed the cheerleaders.
Well, thanks, Vanessa. And thanks, wow, Lectio, always coming through.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This week's voicemail is from Shruti.
Hi, Vanessa and Matt and the Sacred Text team. My name is Shruti. I'm calling from New York, and I was just recently listening to an episode of Sacred Text, and it was the book 5, Dolores Detention. And I was really captivated by your discussion about Hermione confronting the twins, and it just made me think about the evolution of Hermione's activism and how in book 4 we see her taking charge for the elves with what is really good intentions, but I think comes off on reflection as a little bit of white savior kind of energy. And then I think she actually makes some progress here in book 5 because she is advocating for a group that cannot articulate themselves and needs special protections in a way that adults have to speak for them, which is children, first years. She's not telling the twins that they can't test anyone. She's particularly indignant about the first years because she knows that they can't stand up for themselves. And then in book 6, it's interesting that she kind of doesn't take this activism further with Slug Club. I would think she wouldn't like it because it's not merit-based and it's a lot of sucking up. But because she is an inside member of the club, she doesn't really see that it might be excluding other students. And I know at the end we hear that she eventually works for the Wizengamot and she kind of champions human rights and wizard rights and all creature rights. But I just wish we saw more of that evolution because book 7, she's kind of rerouted into finding Horcruxes and fighting Voldemort. So I just thought that was super interesting. And I would love to hear your thoughts on Hermione's evolution as a human rights activist.
Shruti, amazing that you talked about the twins and Hermione. Like, I think it's uncanny the way that this voicemail fits in with everything we've talked about today, that we evolve and we think that we're being kind when really we're being pitying and patronizing, and that, you know, I think that it's just really hard to be good. And I think we act like it's simple and it's not. And that doesn't mean we should stop trying. But even Hermione, right? It's just, it's really, really hard to be good. And thank you for that really beautiful reminder.
The other thing that I'm struck by in your voicemail, Shruti, is how, like, I think I've read Hermione differently at different stages of life. You know, I think I read her enthusiastically and then with some critique. And now what I'm noticing is the absence of anyone else leading on these kind of questions within the wizarding world. And so I find myself actually not critical of her actions, but much more understanding of the process of her growth, because she is really figuring this out by herself. Like, there's no Madame Pince that we know of. Like, there's no library help here, which is usually Hermione's go-to teacher, right? Like, she's often an autodidact, but this is a kind of a practice rather than a theoretical learning, which I just really admire. And so I find myself cheering her on, like, even in those early missteps, because I know that we wouldn't get the later Hermione without those earlier baby steps in her activism and human rights work, or species rights work, I should say. So, yeah, joining you in a celebration of Hermione.
It is now time for us to honor members of our community who've been loved and lost. Elsa Reiss, who was 88, a fierce woman and a kind soul and a beloved Oma. Laura Long, who was 68, a friend and captivating singer, actress, and artist. And Pat Reed, who was 79, a mother, grandmother, professional clown, and smiler. And Jean Slavin, who was a kindergarten teacher and mom. May their memories be a blessing.
Vanessa, we too get to bless someone at the end of this chapter, and I'm wondering who you want to bless.
I want to bless the Dreamboats, Fred and George Weasley. They are flipping fearless in this chapter, and they are using their talents and their skills and their passion to good. They are not trying to insert themselves in ways that are outside of their skills, which I think is something that we are all tempted to do. They join the DA. They keep doing everything that they can and are using their gifts. They blow through their whole fireworks stash, right? Like, they leave it all out there. And they're just, like, bringing joy and humor and rebellion. And I am just in awe of their absolute courage. And I just want to shout out anyone out there who's bringing joy and being so brave. What about you, Casper? Who would you like to bless this week?
I'm going to bless Ernie McMillan. Right at the beginning of the chapter, Ernie is talking with Fred and George and Hermione, Ron, and Harry. And the twins give this warning about, you know, the ensuing chaos that's about to go down. And Ernie is just like, he has such, like, normie vibes. He's like, how can you invert the prefect system with this new, like, inquisitor thing and docking points from the houses? But my favorite moment is Ernie muttered something about unfinished transfiguration homework and scurried away. So to anyone who has to make an awkward exit or who is making up a small white lie in order to get out of there in time before, you know, things get messy, a blessing for Ernie and a blessing for you.
Ernie gets a lot of love on this podcast between you and Matt. God bless him. So, Casper, next week we are doing the chapter Careers Advice, chapter 29, Careers Advice, through the theme of community with Matt Potts. But we will also be welcoming back Delphine Mooney to our podcast from On the Rise, because we are in the middle of our fundraiser with On the Rise. And just as a reminder, everyone, On the Rise is a day program that is uniquely effective at working with homeless and formerly homeless women, transgender and non-binary individuals who do not fit the requirements of other programs. And we are so excited to be joined by Delphine again, and we will be reading that chapter through the theme of community. You can find out more about our fundraiser by going to harrypottersacredtext.com. This was a Not Sorry production. We are a feminist production company. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Vanessa Zoltan. And we are edited and produced by AJ Aramas. Our music is by Ivan Paisau and Nick Bull, and we are distributed by Acast.
Thanks to Shruti for this week's voicemail, Ariana Nedelman, Julia Augie, Margaret H. Willison, Nikki Zoltan, Hannah Rehack, Matt Potts, Courtney Brown, Natalie Folkerts, Stephanie Pulsell, and everyone who sent in their names of their loved ones. We'll be back again next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Dolores Jane Umbridge, High Inquisitor, has replaced Albus Dumbledore as head of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. I'm Casper Ter Kyle.
And I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And this is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
That made it sound like you put the educational order in.
I'm like, I am the herald of the wizarding world.
I was like, oh my God, Casper, why did you do that?